When a crime is committed, the perpetrator inevitably leaves behind something, a description, DNA, or physical evidence. This is the criminal's print on the scene. Welcome to the Criminal Prints Podcast, episode 14.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Criminal Prints Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Zach.
And this is your co-host, Jaron.
And today, we're going to be talking about the murder of Tammy Zowicki. Tammy was born on March 13, 1971, in Pleasant Hill, Pennsylvania. In 2000, Pleasant Hill, Pennsylvania had a population of 2,301.
Tammy had blonde hair and green eyes. She was 5'2" and weighed 120 pounds. Her nickname was Z because she loved to take power naps. Kind of a unique nickname. Her parents are Henry, who goes by Hank, and Joanne Zowicki. Her father, Hank, passed away, unfortunately, on May 26th of 2015, but Joanne is still around and kicking. Tammy had three siblings, all brothers, Todd, Dean, and Darren Zowicki.
Tammy owned a white 1985 Pontiac T100, and she loved her car. From everything I've seen, Tammy was a phenomenal person. She was described as a fun-loving and spirited person. She had a love for nature, animals, and art. Also, Tammy had a passion for photography and was very good at and loved taking pictures. One of Tammy's friends, Rebecca Campbell, described Tammy as, quote, "She was the nicest person in the world."
Tammy's favorite actor was James Dean, which seems to be pretty common with young women. And her favorite cartoon character was Garfield. She attended high school at Eastside High School. They were the Eagles, and they were located in Taylor, South Carolina. She was a talented athlete herself, and she played soccer in high school and also in college at Grinnell College, and that was located in Grinnell, Iowa.
Tammy's high school principal, Brody Bricker, said that in large measure, Tammy was responsible for the school having a girls' soccer team. Brody also said, quote, "She had a lot of school spirit. The whole family did." So, Tammy, on her college summers off, would stay with her parents in Marton, New Jersey. And she would actually work at Blockbuster. She absolutely loved movies. Her mother, Joanne, said that she'd watch most anything except those involving crime or violence.
In fact, the night before she went to college for her senior year, she watched her last movie, and that was Fried Green Tomatoes. She decided to head back to college early so she could take preseason pictures of the school's college football team for the school newspaper. And again, photography is something she enjoyed, so it was kind of fun for her. She had been home, and she enjoyed her summer off, but she was also very excited to go back for her senior year of college. She was majoring in Spanish, and she wanted to teach Spanish. The idea was as an instructor at a small college.
So at college, Tammy stayed at Gates Hall, which was one of the five original dorms of Grinnell College. And she got paired randomly. She didn't have any control over this, but she got paired with Amy Fort as her roommate. And it worked out wonderful. Her and Amy quickly became friends. They had a lot in common. For example, they both played sports. And Amy would later say about Tammy, quote, "She loved life, enjoyed every day, and didn't harp on the negative." Amy also said, "We would laugh and do goofy things."
If you've been to college, especially in a dorm, you know that they have a lot of rules. One of them generally is you can't have pets in your dorm. But despite that, she took in a three-legged cat, and they named him Tripod Bob, which is a great name. Tripod Bob actually became a legend around there, and now there's actually a coffee shop on campus named Tripod Bob. Every time she would get home and come through the doors, her cat Bob would meow so loudly that they joked about it being her talking cat.
So 2 days before, on August 21st, 1992, Tammy and her younger brother Darren, who was 19, and he was actually a sophomore at Northwestern University, made a 9-hour trip, stopping near Pittsburgh, where their parents were visiting relatives in Evanston, Illinois.
On the 22nd, they left to drop Darren off at Northwestern, again in Evanston, Illinois, and they started to have car trouble during the trip. Darren said that, quote, "The car stalled a few times, the engine would just decelerate, the oil light would flicker, and then when you'd pull over, the engine would shut off." Darren also said after the next two stalls, quote, "I added oil and water and it ran fine. Her car was overheating and her temperature gauge had hit the red zone a few times."
So everything starts on August 23rd, 1992. And keep in mind, it's August, so it's freaking hot. So that morning, Tammy stopped by her brother's to say goodbye to him and his girlfriend. And Darren, being a loving brother, checked the car out and told Tammy that it seemed to be doing that thing again. He told her, quote, "Just stop somewhere and wait until evening when it's cooler, like a rest area."
Around noon, Tammy left and started making the trip back to Grinnell College, to take pictures for the college football team. This is roughly a 5-hour trip when driving. And again, classes don't start for 2 weeks, so she was heading there early. So on her drive, the car problems came back up. She was seen with her car pulled over on the westbound shoulder of I-80, located next to mile marker 83 in central Illinois. This is 5 miles east of LaSalle, Illinois. So August 23rd was a Sunday, and so I-80 was very, very busy that day. And many people reported seeing Tammy next to her car, about 60 people, in fact, between 3 and 4 p.m.
The hood of her Pontiac T-100 was up, which we know isn't a surprise because of the overheating problems the car was having. Some witnesses reported seeing a green Datsun pickup parked behind her T-100 Pontiac. Another witness described seeing a white semi-truck that had two brown diagonal stripes down the side of it parked by her.
The driver of the white semi-truck was described by witnesses as a white man, between 35 and 40 years old. He was a pretty big guy, over 6 feet tall, and he had dark, bushy hair. And this, unfortunately, was the last time anyone saw Tammy talking to the semi-truck driver. At 5:05 p.m., an Illinois State Police officer spotted her car on the side of the road, and he marked it as an abandoned vehicle, like you see quite often. At this time, the car was locked.
So Tammy's parents were a little concerned, but not overly worried, when she didn't call and let them know that she'd arrived that afternoon back to school. Joanne, her mother, said, quote, "We thought she probably met up with friends and it got too late to call." But this was a Sunday. By the next morning, which was Monday the 24th, they still hadn't heard from Tammy, and at this point, they became very concerned.
Her father, Hank, said, quote, "By then we knew something was wrong. It just wasn't like her to not check in with us." So Joanne, Tammy's mother, called friends at Grinnell, but they said they hadn't seen her. And so obviously, by this time, they're extremely concerned. They know, okay, something is wrong. So someone posted this message on the board outside Tammy's dorm room. "Where have you been? Your mom's having a cow."
So Joanne called the Illinois State Police and notified them that Tammy didn't arrive back at college. Joanne also called the campus police and had them check Tammy's dorm and look for her car. But unfortunately, they didn't see Tammy or her car. So at first, unfortunately, law enforcement didn't take Tammy's case seriously, and they treated it as a standard missing persons case. Joanne said about this, quote, "It's been frustrating from day one." On the flip side of that, Tammy's family and her friends took her disappearance very seriously.
This, of course, is because they knew her. They knew that she was a very responsible person and young woman, and that she wouldn't just go missing. So they went into action. Her friends and other students there made flyers and drove all over the state, and they actually did this for 6 days looking for Tammy. Her roommate, Amy Fork, said, quote, "We were keeping hope alive, but we were very concerned," end quote.
And that's really cool when a college family comes together and helps each other, you know, looking for Tammy and doing everything they can do. That's really awesome.
Tammy's parents went to Chicago, where they stayed with a friend of Tammy's, and then every day they drove to LaSalle. They were looking for Tammy. On August 24th at 2 p.m., the police had Tammy's car towed away, again off of I-80, but it wasn't until 7 p.m. that the owner of the car was identified.
So Tammy's car was towed to the police station and left outside, unfortunately. By the time the fingerprint crew arrived and started working on looking at her car, so many people had touched Tammy's car that there was nothing left to dust. It was only when Tammy's car was towed and logged in to the computer that Tammy's parents learned of the car's location.
And this is when Hank, her father, filed a missing persons report with the Illinois State Police, obviously as soon as they learned that the car was picked up. Along with Tammy's car being locked, all her packed bags were still in the trunk, but her car keys and her purse were missing. It's estimated she had about $150 cash with her, credit cards, her purse, and a camera, which is a Canon with a 35mm lens. These items were all missing along with her keys. Yep. The Illinois State Police searched the I-80 site where her car was found. They used metal detectors, search dogs, and a helicopter to look for any signs of her or the missing items. So after they towed the car, the police started the car up, and it did start and it did run. But again, these were intermittent problems that seemed to be related to the motor warming up. So it doesn't really tell us that much.
So while in Chicago, Tammy's parents and family members turned to the media and made emotional pleas for help. So before the TV cameras, her brother Todd said, quote, "We're coming for you." Her brother Dean added that, quote, "If someone's holding her, they're not going to be able to get far. Putting up with three brothers all the time, she can handle herself pretty well." Volunteers continued to help in the search. They helped the Zawicki family fax revised flyers to trucking groups and about 40,000 trucking firms nationwide. And keep in mind that the last person that Tammy was seen talking to was a trucker.
On September 1st, 9 days after she disappeared, Lonnie DeMotti, who was 37 years old, was driving his pickup truck on I-44 near Joplin, Missouri. This is 500 miles southwest of LaSalle, so quite a distance away. It started to rain, and he was concerned that his tools that were in the back of the truck were getting wet. So he pulled over at the Sarcoxie exit, and he said, quote, "I was finished and was coming around to the front of the truck when I smelled the odor. I looked right and saw the blanket in the grass. Just from the shape of it, I could tell it was a body," end quote.
Then Lonnie immediately drove to the nearby highway patrol station and returned to the scene with an officer. And they made a small cut in the blanket and found a very grim discovery, which was a human leg. The body was laying face up on a grassy slope about 14 feet from the pavement. It had been wrapped tightly in a white twin-size sheet and a dull red blanket. There was also silver duct tape that closed off both ends.
The body was shoeless, and unfortunately, it had been quite some time and fairly high heat, so it was badly decomposed as well. It was clothed in a blue t-shirt that said Eastside Eagles Soccer 1989, akin to her high school. The body also had on a pair of blue faded cutoff sweatpants and athletic socks.
So Lawrence County Coroner Dan Larkin showed up and did the first examination of the decomposed body. And Larkin said, quote, it looked like she'd been there for a good 4 or 5 days. And also keep in mind that the clothes the body had on were not the clothes that Tammy had on when she left for college. Now, the body itself had been stabbed 7 times, 6 times in a circular pattern around the heart, and once on the right arm.
Despite these similarities with Tammy, and in hindsight it being very obvious who it was not immediately identified. Larkin, again the coroner, said, it's unbelievable how many girls fit the body description. After the news hit, I got calls from all over the U.S. from people thinking it was their daughter. On Thursday, September 3rd, the local police called Tammy's family to confirm they had definitely ID'd, based on matching dental records, the body was indeed Tammy.
Bonnie Yablotsky, Joanne's sister, said, quote, losing your kid is every parent's worst nightmare, but we're made of strong Polish stock. I told Joanne, hang in there. If you let yourself fall apart, the criminal hasn't only taken one life, but 2 or more. And I absolutely love this quote. This is a wonderful quote by Bonnie.
And if you know many Polish people, that's very much how they are. They're very community-oriented and very strong, very close as families, so it's very fitting.
So the autopsy also concluded that besides the stab wounds, Tammy had been sexually assaulted. According to Martin McCarthy, who retired from the Illinois State Police in 2001, the knife used was small, almost like a pen knife. Martin also said that Tammy died from internal bleeding. Another note of interest is duct tape was placed over Tammy's mouth to muffle any screams.
So the autopsy concluded that Tammy had been dead for up to a week before her body was discovered. That's quite some time. And later you're going to find, you know, a week out in the sun not only makes a body decompose, it also makes a lot of evidence decompose or deteriorate. Detective Greg Brandma of the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office said Tammy had been killed elsewhere and then was dumped at that site.
And this is interesting to me, Jaron, because we know that she was last seen talking to a trucker. And to me, it makes perfect sense because the body's found 500 miles away, which is very fitting of being a trucker. Another interesting note is her watch was a Loris brand, and her watch had a green umbrella on its face. It was missing. So she didn't have her watch that she clearly had when she went on the trip. And the watch had a green band and actually played the tune, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And this is a very unique piece of evidence, a very unique watch.
It's said that it's possible a club patch for her soccer team is missing, and it could possibly be from Tammy's shorts. And this is the type of thing that experienced killers do. They collect things. Tammy's funeral service was held on September 8th, 1992, at the St. John's Newman Roman Catholic Church in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Over 50 people came to the funeral, and Tammy was buried at the West Newton Memorial Cemetery that's south of Pittsburgh. Interestingly, this is close to the Roman Catholic Church to where her parents were married.
Tammy's death involved an abduction across state lines. So the FBI joined the 14 Illinois State Police investigators that were working on Tammy's case. But as we mentioned a little bit before, initially they didn't take the disappearance very seriously, and they even claimed that Tammy was possibly a runaway, which we know is couldn't be anything farther from the truth. But one interesting tip that came up was a motel clerk in Mendota, which is 15 miles north of LaSalle. The clerk said that a lone woman resembling Tammy came in and asked about room rates. The girl said that she was driving to her college in Iowa when her car broke down on I-80, and that now a trucker outside was giving her a lift to Wisconsin to visit her boyfriend. So this is very interesting because we know that Tammy's car did break down and that it was on I-80, but she wasn't going to Wisconsin to visit a boyfriend, and she didn't even have a boyfriend.
But the motel clerk did take and pass two polygraphs. But again, they were unable to confirm that she had a boyfriend in Wisconsin, so nobody could corroborate this story, and it ended up just being another tip that didn't pan out. But it is a very interesting one. Tammy's parents did their very best to keep this case in the spotlight. For obvious reasons, you want people talking about it, hopefully drum up more information. They even appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show and AM Philadelphia. Joanne said, "We have decided on lots of exposure to keep Tammy's case alive." The task force of the 14 Illinois State Police members and FBI members was disbanded in just months.
And I can't even imagine how frustrating this would be for Tammy's family that it was disbanded within months. Martin McCarthy, who we talked about earlier, and he was a retired Illinois State Police detective, said that he personally believes the investigation was compromised when this task force was disbanded, and that because the police didn't investigate right away, the investigation was flawed from the beginning. Now, Martin has a person of interest, somebody that he thinks is responsible and he considers a prime suspect that needs looked into further. And this individual is Lonnie Beardbrot.
He was a truck driver, and he had a history of violent crimes. He had done prison time for armed robbery and was originally from the Illinois area where Tammy had last been seen. He was visiting his brother when Tammy disappeared, and his Missouri trailer home wasn't far from where the body was found. A witness told McCarthy she saw a man matching Beardbrot's description with Tammy and her broken-down car as she passed on the interstate.
So to make it even more interesting, not long after this, Lonnie gave his then-wife a musical watch that was extremely similar to the one that Tammy had, and keep in mind was missing, most likely stole by the killer. How interesting that he gave a watch to his wife that matched this description.
Yeah, it is. And if it was hers, what a stupid thing to do. And it's just really unfortunate we couldn't make him pay for it. Again, if that was him and that was hers.
And as Jaron had mentioned before, when I saw this, I personally, my thought went to immediately to souvenirs. And Jaron nailed it, serial killer, because they like to keep tokens. Tammy's body was also found wrapped in a blanket that had a Kenworth logo on it. And Lonnie drove a Kenworth-made truck. Having said this, Lonnie Beardbrot did give hair samples and his fingerprints to police when he was questioned about Tammy's case.
McCarthy said that the prosecutors resisted charging him because they just didn't think that there was enough evidence to take the case to a grand jury. And if it was him, it sort of took care of himself. He died of AIDS at the age of 41 in 2002.
So another person of interest that law enforcement looked into was a possible suspect by the name of Bruce Mendenhall. And he was an Illinois trucker who was convicted in 2007 of the murder of 25-year-old Sarah Hulbert. Now, while in jail, Bruce actually confessed to murdering six more women. However, Tammy was not one of the six he confessed to. But despite this, clearly law enforcement wanted to talk to him more, and they looked into him and investigated him, that the possibility maybe he did kill Tammy.
But despite all this, Tammy wasn't his typical profile for a victim, and they kind of just moved on from there. They couldn't find any evidence connecting him to Tammy's case. They also looked into James Dante McKay. He was a Tampa truck driver who came to light in 1992 when he was arrested in Indiana on charges of attempted rape.
And this is interesting because this is 1992. This is the same year Tammy's murder happened. A woman told police that James attempted to rape her as she was talking on a payphone. And after his arrest, they found pornography and women's underwear in his truck. So they looked into him, but unfortunately, investigators couldn't find any evidence that linked him to Tammy's murder.
And on top of that, trucking logs and gas receipts put James at least 100 miles away from where she was killed. So we'll talk a little bit about the current status of the investigation. At the 10-year anniversary mark, which of course was 2002, the FBI renewed their public plea for any information to help solving Tammy's case. They announced a $50,000 reward for information leading to an arrest in the case.
On the 20th anniversary of Tammy's death, the Illinois State Police said, quote, "The investigation remains a top priority, both for me personally, as well as the men and women of the agency." And this was said by Hiram Gra, who was the state police director. And Hiram also said that authorities are committed to bringing justice and peace to the Zawicki family.
On the day before the 25th anniversary of Tammy's kidnapping and murder, the FBI and Illinois State Police announced they are using modern technology to retest evidence in the case. Master Sergeant Matt Berwickel, a police spokesman, said, "There have been and continue to be several persons of interest. However, no suspects have been named and no arrests have been made." So, Zach, they talk about using modern technology. It seems quite obvious they're talking about DNA, right?
Absolutely, they are.
So, let's talk about the DNA in this case.
So, Matt said that DNA is a constant evolving science, so investigators are coming up with new ways to retest exhibits to find DNA strands on materials at labs for the state police and FBI, as well as other labs outside of law enforcement. And we know that DNA has improved so much. Jaron, I'm sure you've seen it all over the news, all these cold cases that are being solved through DNA and through GEDmatch. And it requires much less of a sample now than it did 10, 20 years ago to obtain a full DNA profile.
They can obtain stuff now from things that were unimaginable when this crime was committed.
So this news release also said that they were exploring new leads and that they were examining over 200 items of evidence along with retesting with the modern DNA technology. So as of 2017, there was only one DNA profile that they have, and this was actually from a beer can that was by Tammy's car when it was on the side of the road. So they ran the DNA profile through CODIS but did not get a match.
So for anybody that doesn't know what CODIS is, CODIS essentially is a DNA profile system that the FBI uses. Essentially, if anybody committed a crime that had been entered in a CODIS, which it most likely would have been, they would have known that it was a match and known who it was through that system.
So, Jaron, that leads me to the question, do you think that this beer can was just possibly roadside trash?
It almost definitely was. You know, you drive any stretch of interstate throughout the country, you're going to find maybe 100 of these in a 20-mile stretch, so it probably is, but it's definitely something that they needed to check, and I'm glad to know that they did. It's just unfortunate they didn't match it with anything.
So we know that DNA testing is being done by at least one private lab currently. It is being tested, and results may be available by the end of summer this year.
So that is very, very, very exciting.
That is huge.
Because if anything is going to solve this case, it's almost definitely going to be one of two things, DNA or somebody coming out saying, hey, I heard this, and it leading quickly, probably quickly, to somebody. But DNA is our much more likely situation here.
And I hope and pray that this will be successful and they will obtain a DNA profile, because we know that once they have a DNA profile, criminals, game on.
Remember how many cold cases, especially lately, have been solved using DNA. But this shouldn't stop people from coming forward with anything you may have that would contribute to solving this case. It might even be possible that even though you didn't think of something as evidence, that it is. So, for example, the patch or the watch or the trinkets that you know that she had in the car, anything like that. If you know, hey, I know somebody that has that, turn it in. You never know.
Or maybe you heard someone talking or bragging about possibly killing a blonde-haired girl in 1992, and you thought, oh, they're joking, or whatever the situation may be, report it. Any help is huge. And remember, you can remain anonymous with any tips or information you give.
So people often feel like, well, it's too late. You know, this case was a long time ago now, in 1992. But just keep in mind, it's never too late. Even if this person, the killer, is dead, justice needs to happen. The family deserves to know what happened and who did it. So please, 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 if you know anything, might know anything, know somebody that might know something, just get it out there.
Also, check out the Facebook page, Who Killed Tammy Zawicki? And I personally want to thank Robert, who's an admin on the Who Killed Tammy Zawicki Facebook page, for helping us on the research and being so kind to us in assisting us on this case. Robert, you were a huge help, and thank you again. Thank you so much.
If you have tips or information, please call the tip line of the Illinois State Police at 815-726-6377. And again, remember, you can always call 911. If you don't know anyone else, just call them. You can also send a message on the Facebook page, Who Killed Tammy Zawicki? And if requested, they will keep it anonymous and report it to authorities.
So, Jaron, let's talk about conclusions. What are your thoughts on the case and thoughts of it going forward?
Looking at the case, I think it's a real shame that she wasn't found earlier. It's sad that the police didn't take it a little more seriously, but I know in Illinois they're very busy. It's just very unfortunate. And it's a horrible crime to somebody that obviously didn't deserve it. And I hope, and I actually believe, that they are going to have some form of justice at some point.
I couldn't agree more, Jaron. I think that Tammy was a sweet, sweet girl. She didn't deserve this. And I absolutely would love to see justice. I would love nothing more than this scumbag that committed this crime to be brought to justice. I also believe, Jaron, that with the advancements in DNA technology, I'm very confident that they will obtain a DNA profile, and this scumbag will answer for his crimes at some point. So that is the episode, The Murder of Tammy Zawicki. We thank everybody for listening to us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any case suggestions, feel free to check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Our Twitter is @podcastcriminal. And please tell your friends about us. If you would be so kind, please review our podcast and subscribe to it. It would go a long ways with helping the future growth of the podcast. So everybody have an absolutely fantastic day.
And remember, keep your record clean and your prints off the scene.